If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
You've been listening to Calm Down Cologne, the title track from Garage à Toi's latest release. Garage à Toi made its debut some 22 years ago with Mystery Funk to wide acclaim in 1999 and then evolved into several different configurations before a hiatus in 2015 after releasing Always Be Happy, Stay Evil. GAT was always a side project for drummer Stanton Moore, guitarist Charlie Hunter, and saxophone player Skerrick. So why are they back, and how did it happen? Let's find out with Galactic drummer and a third of the GAT trio, the great Stanton Moore.
So we started getting calls to play gigs, you know, and we have this, you know, this theory that after 20 years, nostalgia starts to kick in and people start getting interested in things that they were into 20 years ago. So once that 20-year mark started hitting from Mystery Funk, which was a record that we came out with that was outtakes from my first record, All Cooped Out. So it was outtakes that we felt didn't fit with what we were going to release as the record, but it was all good stuff. And it was just me, Charlie, and Skerrick. So we released it as its own thing, came up with the name Garage à Toi, and released it as Mystery Funk. And then that was 1998. So, you know, around 2017, 18, you know, started getting calls to play together some more. And so we did. We started playing together, and then we were like, oh, let's make another record. So we did, and made it much like we did Mystery Funk, with just a couple of composed ideas and a whole lot of improvisation.
Yeah, we'll get to the record in just a sec. I want to ask about the different incarnations of the band through the years. I mean, you've had, it was Garage à Quatre or Senko for a bit. It wasn't just the three of you. And even the three of you, it wasn't really the three of you. Was that just opportunity because other guys weren't available? What happened there that shifted the band so dramatically towards the end?
Yeah, so it started with Mystery Funk as three, so easily we could call it Garage à Toi. Well, we played a few gigs and then maybe even just a couple or one gig, and then Mike Dillon came and sat in, right? I mean, Skerrick and Mike were joined at the hip for years. And so Skerrick was like, can my buddy Mike Dillon come sit in? And so he did, and he sat in on a gig that we did opening for Oysterhead with Trey Anastasio and Les Claypool and Stuart Copeland. And that was at the Sanger Theater. And I guess that opening spot that we did with Mike sitting in, it was taped and spread around, and people started to become really interested in Garage à Toi. And so we're like, well, is everybody cool just having Mike on the gigs all the time? We're like, yeah, sure. So Mike became a member of Garage à Toi. And so the next record that we made, Emphasizer, Mike was on. And then Charlie decided to focus more on his solo stuff. So we're like, well, we really like playing together. Maybe we should try to seek out another person who can cover bass lines and play harmony. We're not going to find somebody who plays bass and guitar at the same time. There's only one of those. So, there are a few others now, but you know, at the time I was like, right, well, let's try to find maybe an organ player, maybe Marco Benevento. So we actually maybe did a gig before Marco. We did Garage à Modeski.
Wow.
Where we had John Modeski. So if you can imagine that, that was really cool. And we may have even done something with Robert Walter, maybe, but then we did something with Marco Benevento, and it was like, oh, this makes a lot of sense. So then right, we did a couple records with Marco and toured a good bit with Marco, and that was a really fun lineup. And we had a lot of fun with playing with Marco, and that's kind of how things evolved. And then we just kind of, you know, everybody started focusing on their own projects, and then we started getting the calls to do shows with the original Garage à Toi with Skerrick and Charlie. So that's where we're at right now.
You spent an afternoon. So this record was made in an afternoon in Seattle, right? At Stone Gossard's studio, Litho.
Correct.
Litho in Seattle. Yeah. And you had some ideas going into the studio, but the three of you are such accomplished musicians that, and you've played so well together for so many years, that you don't really need a lot to go in and just start improvising and jamming, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, Charlie is pretty much a one-man band, so you just wind him up and let him go, and then you just, you know, fall in and just play along. And it just works very fluidly with us. Like, we just had full confidence we could just go in, play some stuff, and, you know, pick out the best stuff and come out with a record.
I'm always curious about the process, because it is obviously live off the floor. It is the three of you. Skerrick is probably the busiest of the three of you, because he has to flip over to the Rhodes 54 and the Mellotron and all the other keys that he plays. Is that still done all in real time? Like, you guys are just playing and it's all done in real time?
Yeah. I mean, Skerrick might have overdubbed some horn stuff, but it very minimal, you know? I mean, most of it is all done just in real time. And definitely when we play live, I mean, he's doing all of that jumping back and forth live, and even harmonizing himself, you know, with his looping pedal. He'll build chords and build riffs, and then we'll come in and play to that loop. He is very active, and he's here at my house right now.
He's there right now.
Yeah, he is. I have to go see if he wants to come up and say hi.
Yeah. Well, we can do that in a sec. The album's centerpiece is this 10-minute plus thing in a pro, which is just, it's unbelievable. It's funk, it's outer space breakbeats, it's Miles on the Corner, it's everything. When you're sitting there, the three of you, do you know where this thing, this three-headed monster is going to go? Or is it just kind of like, let's let loose and have fun?
Oh yeah, we don't know where it's gonna go, you know. It's fun because you're very present. You have to be paying attention. You have to be focused, and to be in that state with two of your friends that you've known for so long, and just be everybody playing heads up ball and everybody just focused and everybody just paying attention. It's a really fun place to be, because you know. I mean, things could fall apart at any moment, but we have confidence that it won't. And we have trust that if it starts to, one of us will help, you know, help guide each other to make sure that it doesn't fall apart. So it's, you know, it's kind of like the closest thing you can get to flying with your friends. It's like, you know, maybe we'll crash and burn, but we know that, you know, it's just music. So what's the worst that can happen? Nobody's going to get hurt.
It's probably through that danger that the brilliance comes through, right? I mean, you talk to stand-up comedians or other improvisers, other musical improvisers, and that's usually generally where the magic shines through, is when there is that little bit of danger.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's what makes it so fun, right? And, you know, getting up and playing a set where you know all the material and all that, that's fun too, because you know, yeah, we're gonna present this and it's gonna be impactful and it's gonna be impressive how well put together this is. That's one presentation and that's fun. But going on a journey with the musicians and the listener and not knowing exactly where you're gonna wind up, that's fun too.
Yeah, it's like you have your day job where you're locked in sort of for the most part. And then you have this other hobby type thing where it's other stuff. From a purely musical point of view, you and Charlie make up the rhythm section, but Charlie's doing a lot more than just rhythm because he's playing all those guitar lines. It's different. Is it much different than just playing with a regular bass player for you? Or is it kind of the same thing and Charlie just has to do more on his own?
So it's different than just playing with a bass player. It's more like playing with an organ player. You know, playing with a bass player, you lock in with the bass player, and then the guitar player might be playing a little ahead or might be swinging things a little differently, right? Or if you've got a keyboard player, same kind of thing. But when you're playing with an organ player who's kicking bass and playing keys, they're in lockstep, and then you just lock into that. Playing with Charlie is like that. You're playing with a bass player and a guitar player who are in lockstep, and you just fall in. So in some ways, it's a lot easier than playing with a bass player and a guitar player, or a bass player and a keyboard player. He's just one unit, and you just fall in with what he's so effortlessly but confidently laying down.
Yeah. It's incredible what he does. I mean, I remember seeing him 25 years ago and my mind was just blown, because it's true. He is a one piece bit, like he doesn't need anybody else, right? He's a talent unto himself. And the three of you really are incredible musicians. It must be quite a thing. I mean, you've been doing it for so long and these guys are old friends now, but the amount of talent that's in this trio is just, it's stupendous, right?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's fun. I mean, it's like, you know, it's very comfortable, right? And even though we don't play together all the time, like when we get together, it's just like, oh, this is so effortless and comfortable and familiar too. You know, it's like playing with, you know, your musical brothers.
When you play live, do you have to go back and listen to stuff, or do you just go out there and sort of have an idea of what the heads are, have an idea of what this thing used to sound like, and you're just improving it fresh every time? Is that the idea?
Yeah, well, during sound check, usually we'll touch on the heads and touch on the main parts of the songs, but we're not really focused on trying to replicate the way things sounded in the past. We want to know the melodies and the forms of the tunes but then play them as we would play them now.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about playing them as you would play them now. Obviously we're getting around, we're almost done this pandemic thing. People are starting to tour a little bit. You have a bar that you have access to on a fairly regular basis, probably. Mm-hmm. What's the plan for Garage à Toi touring moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And it whatever we do, you know, it's got to make sense. And I don't see us doing long extended tours, but maybe fly-ins, maybe festivals, things like that makes sense. Because also keep in mind, we all have all these other projects. So whatever we do kind of has to be a very strategic strike that fits in between all of our other projects that we've got going on. So you may see us fly in for two nights here in one place or two nights in another place or festivals, things like that. I don't think you're going to see a 2 to 3 week extended run.
And maybe some spots at Tipitina's.
Yeah, definitely. And we've been talking about that. And as we progress, that's probably going to be in the cards.
How is New Orleans? I mean, Jazz Festival is supposed to be going on right about now or in a couple of weeks, and it's obviously not. You know, I've had the great fortune of, I spoke to George Porter Jr. a couple of weeks ago about his new record, and I've spoken to Ivan about his new record. What's the sense from your perspective on what's going on in New Orleans and the recovery in such an important musical town?
I'm right now very proud of the way that New Orleans is handling things. I think because there's such a sense of community and because we all went through Katrina, I think that there's in general, there's a very high level of respect for each other and it, within the local New Orleans community. And so what I've been seeing from my personal experience, when we opened Tips, we could at the time only open 75 people, all seated with table service starting at 7 o'clock. And that's a completely different experience than we've ever presented at Tipitina's or anybody has ever come to. And people showed up and it was sold out immediately. Everybody's been extremely respectful. Everybody's been very grateful too and very appreciative and has really, really, really dug it. And so much so that my wife and I, we've been buying tables for the 7 o'clock shows, like Ivan Neville, George Porter Jr., John Cleary, Walter Wolf Band Washington. These are all shows that we went to at 7 o'clock. Anders Osborne, I had a gig, so I went at 9:30. But these are all shows we went to and paid our own money to sit at a table. Because I can't just be like, oh, well, on the table, right?
Right.
Valuable real estate we got to sell. But we're enjoying it so much that we're paying for tables to go and sit and experience it. And everybody's coming up and being like, oh my God, this is such a wonderful experience to be able to sit, have your space, have your beverages, have service come to you and to experience it in that way. And then after the 7 o'clock show, we get out at 8:30 and then we go to dinner.
Yeah.
Like, and I've played there 3 times now with my trio. And the third time I had Anders Osborne as my guest. And then we go out to dinner and it's a wonderful experience. And when we go out and we see, you know, everybody's being respectful. I mean, there are places that people are going a little overboard.
Of course.
You know, I'm not gonna name names, but the places that we frequent and that we're going to, I'm very proud of the way that people are conducting themselves. And that just means that if we keep moving forward like that, we're gonna be able to keep opening. So to Patinas has been able to increase our capacity to, I think we're at 92 now.
Wow.
And we legally can increase to more than that, but we want to make sure that every seat that we sell is a good seat where you can see the stage. So we don't want to sell obstructed views. So that's where we're at, and it's wonderful, man. The feedback that we're getting, you know, and I went to a show at the Howlin' Wolf and saw the Headhunters, and that was great too. And everybody was super respectful there. So I'm very optimistic and positive about the direction that things are moving. Hopefully we keep moving in that direction and we keep gradually, responsibly, as we can, start to open. And that's what's happening. And that's what I'm seeing. And I hope that we keep moving in that direction.
I have a lot more questions. I just want to ask you, because you mentioned him, Orpheus and the Mermaids, Anders' new record is incredible, right? Like, yeah. I haven't had a chance to speak to him about it yet, but it's such a good, he's such a strong, strong songwriter. I mean, there aren't too many at his level at this point that are that good at what he does. You bought Tipitina's, the band bought Tipitina's like just before this happened. Has it been like soul crushing to you guys? Cause you had all these big plans and then I guess they were shelved and put on hold for a bit.
Yeah. I mean, yes, the answer is yes. Of course it's soul crushing, but also we have pivoted and shifted in a way that what I'm hoping is in 2 years, 5 years, 10 and more, we'll look back on all of this as, yes, this was the most challenging thing we could have ever imagined to have gone through. But if it wasn't for those challenges at that time, we wouldn't be where we are now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went in this morning and put in some time on the assembly line for the Tipitina's Record Club, packing records. And I'm going back after our interview. I'm going to eat lunch and I'm going back to Tipitina's to put in more time packing records. Like literally putting the bubble wrap, you open up the leaves or the cardboard, you put in the bubble wrap, then you pass it on. And then you take the record and you got to make sure that it's positioned so the record doesn't fly out when the person opens it. You put the record in, then you put a poster in, then you put the cardboard, right? The next person folds it and then they flip it over, they undo the sticky part of it, and then they close it and seal it. Then they pass it.
Right.
And then that person puts the label on it and they put the tape and then they pass it. It's like, I know what I'm talking about because I'm going in and putting in the time.
Yeah. So this is a good advertisement. People need to join the record club so they can have Stanton Moore's DNA on the bubble wrap and on their vinyl.
Yeah. And then when we get somebody that we recognize their name, we like write a little note like, hey man, you know, so glad you signed up. But it's exciting. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of love. And it's literally from our hands to our fans' hands. And, you know, literally right now, I'm like on the phone this morning talking about how we're going to get interns for the next pressing. Because the next pressing is going to be Galactic 25-year anniversary Cooling Off. And it's going to be a double record with 5 unheard songs that people have never heard. And I'm really excited about it, but it's like, we got to get these interns in place because this is too much work for us and our friends and our people who are helping us and our staff. So we need a small army of interns to help us out, but it's exciting. But I know that 2, 5, 10 years from now, the record club's going to be bigger. There are going to be imprints within the record club for different genres. They're the Tipitina's TV, and you know, there's a lot of things that we're doing. These seated shows, we're doing these because this is the way that we have to operate. We've been talking about it before, but now we actually have to do it. So these challenges because of the pandemic have really made us, they put us in a position to where we've had to execute these ideas.
Right, which is cool.
Yeah, and hopefully in 2, 5, 10 years from now, we're just going to be like, man, we're in such a great position. That whole COVID period sucked. I mean, it has sucked.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm honest with you. And it's been frightening and scary as hell, man. I mean, staring financial disaster in the face. But hopefully we'll get to save our stages, support, and all these other things that we've started during this time will put us in a better position 2, 5, 10 years from now.
You have a special guest in your house. I want to ask about the naming of the record and the title track from the record. And yeah. I think the guest who's in your home is best equipped to answer that question because he was there. Can we get him for a sec?
Yeah. Let me go see. Let me literally call down the stairs and see if he'll come.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me go cool. See. Thanks.
Hey, Skipper. And
here he is.
Ta-da! I'll let him sit in the hot seat.
The man, the myth, the legend himself.
He's right here.
What's going on?
Hi, man. Thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it. I know you're, you know, having fun at the Moore household, but we're talking about the new record, and I'm curious about how the new record got its name, and you're the go-to guy on talking about Calm Down Cologne. So how did it all come about?
Calm Down Cologne. Well, a buddy of mine in Seattle, a great artist, Rick Klu, KLU, check him out. Look him up. He's really amazing. He's an old friend too. He was telling me one night, he was working as a bouncer at some bar downtown in Seattle. He was talking about a buddy of his had to use some Calm Down Cologne on an unruly patron. And so I was telling these guys, we were doing a gig or something, and I told them that story, and they started laughing. So I was like, oh, okay, so they like that.
Yeah.
I just write everything down in my phone. So
here's some names.
Yeah, it's great. I guess, you know, it's interesting because you're probably looking for names all the time for these improv pieces, right? I mean, how do these songs get named? Is it just, you know, you all have a list of stuff that you want to use?
Well, legally, we're supposed to go to the Burl Ives website.
Yeah.
Sign in and you do these fingerprint scans and they have these voice activated actuators on the site that it's where it's all legal and everything. And the Burl Ives name generator, you know, gives you the name. You put in the song key.
Yeah.
You know, the length of it and everything. And then this, it doesn't have anything to do with Norelco, like that company.
Right.
Where most people know him from. It's more of another kind of central database. So usually we get the names from there. But this time, you know, we use another source. So it just, you know, it really depends on the year.
How exciting is it for you to be releasing a record now, 22 years since the first record and being back with these guys? I know the record was made a couple of years ago, but just being back with these guys and being in the mind frame of
22. I don't know what you're talking about. 22 years. We never stopped.
Right.
So this is like,
call it a comeback. Don't call it a comeback.
Yeah.
I've been here for years.
Yeah. There's no stopping. No one's counting years. No one's counting months, days. It's like, where's the next gig? It's all relative. It's like,
yeah.
You know, your next gig with someone is either tomorrow or a month away or 6 months away or a year.
Right.
It all doesn't matter.
It's just continuous. Thanks so much, guys, for taking the time. I know Stanton has some records to pack. And I'm sure he might recruit you to do the same. So thanks for taking the time, guys. And thanks for a great record. And can't wait to see you guys out on the road real soon. All right.
Yeah. See you tomorrow night on loudswell.com.
All right. Thanks, guys. Be well. Okay. Cheers.
Right. Bye. Take care.
That was a lot of fun, especially with Skerrick dropping in. By the way, you can watch a live stream album release tonight of Calm Down Cologne, April 16th at loudswell.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to another heater from Calm Down Cologne. Here is The Epic.
Hey,
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.